Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah. Don't you feel it?
Perfect.
Right at the end of the day, I see things coming my way. It's not pretty. It's not good. It's nothing like you thought it would. The boogeyman is here. So now, you got to prepare. Win or lose, it's all up to you. So what you gonna do, what you gonna do? The world is not like it was before. There used to be so much more. But the aliens are back to throw us all off track. What, you didn't think you had enemies? There's no such thing as frenemies. It's changed for the worse. And you are under the curse. Your ancestors left it for you. So now what you gonna do? You feel it all around you. Your essence got a hold of you. No more sneaking, telling lies. Because you realize there's something happening here. Producing fake fear.
Oh, I'm scared.
But don't shed no tears. Just get your shit in gear. Truth is coming down on you. Then you gotta make your own truth. Know your right mind. Your future is the time. Don't become their food.
Eat you.
All they wanna do is snack you. Demonic spirits came down. In 9/11, they came to town. So be ready. So be sure. Survival time is on the menu. Empower yourself, prepare yourself, do yourself, be yourself. Then if that means come hard with the knowledge, then go hard,
go hard.
Can you feel it?
Greetings, everyone. Welcome to the Truth to Power Show. My name is Beverly D. And tonight we have Sister Seta Aset. And she has some books that's called Chemistry. And she's going to read them to us. So this is the time for you to relax, sit back, and listen. Now, her books kind of put me in the mind of the Matrix. They got that kind of spiritual tone to them. So, and she's also is in the process of getting her books turned into a movie. So hopefully this could be the next blockbuster, Panther or The Matron. Now, let me see if this is Sister Seti. I'll see. Wait a minute. Hold on. Is this you, Sister Seti?
Yes, it is. How are you, Sister Bev?
Great. How are you doing?
I'm doing great.
I'm doing
How about
great.
Yourself? Wonderful.
Great. So for those that's not familiar with you or your work, kind of give us a little insight.
Well, it all started as a child. I was always interested in the not so normal things as other children. Even though I did have a child's life, I always looked up to the stars and, you know, wondering what was up there. Were we, you know, are we here on this big blue ball by ourselves? And it, you know, everything just started coming into view as I got older. Because I always thought, you know, we can't be here alone in this place, and there's so many things that's going on around us, so much so that I realized early that we were living in a matrix. But you know, sometimes you kind of think about things and you just can't put your finger on it, but then there are others that'll come along and help you understand it. you know, such as some of my favorite heroes, you know, Bobby Hemmett, Dr. Delbert Blair especially, and people that would come in and talk about things and really make you realize that this is possible.
Right.
So I kind of got my start from there.
Okay. Now tell us about your books. How many books is it?
Well, there are five. The first one is the one that we're into right now, which is called Bright Light. The second one is called Gathering of the Vanguard. The third is The War. The fifth is 9X, which is basically 9X is what we're living in right now. And the last one is In the Realm of the Gods. And this all takes place over a matter of years, starting from 2011 all the way to 2042. And they are, it's a myriad of fiction and nonfiction. Now, some of this stuff is real, and some of it isn't. I guess you would say it was like The Matrix. But you can, you know, once you get into it and start to piece it together, you'll see the things parallel to what's happening today.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a lot of metaphysics, too. So that's great. That's great. That's great. So now you're reading out of which book?
Well, right now we're in the first one called The Bright Light.
Okay.
And this is the start of everything.
Okay. Now, to kind of give us a little review of what you already, the chapters you already read to lead it up to where we at now. For
well,
those that's just coming in.
Yeah, I don't want to confuse the readers or the listeners when we talk about the chapters, because basically it's a countdown. It's a countdown from chapter 100 to chapter 1. So we're starting basically backwards. So if the listeners had been listening and go back and listen to the blog talk, your series on this, then we've already went through from chapter 100 to 97. And so I can give you, let me talk a little bit about 97, and then your listeners can take it back from there. You know, 97 is when our soon-to-be hero's mother, Yira, she kind of had some words with another female that is actually envious of her, because the man that she's married to was her interest, but apparently they wasn't able to connect. So she kind of got angry with her, and that is the start of 96. This is part 96. And also, she, at that time, point in time, was on her way to Africa, where her husband is. He's stationed at this UFO site, and she's on her way there to visit him. Of course, she doesn't know what he's doing out there. She just knows that he's on this mission. But she has relatives there. So right now, she's there with her relatives, and he took her to be with her relatives and for him to meet them. So this is where we are now. So everything seemed like it's going pretty good right now.
Okay,
and I also want to let the listeners know this is a work of fiction. It's fiction, nonfiction. It's for entertainment purposes only. And so we can get right into, I think we were supposed to be on part 96. I think that's where we left off. Since we did have a lot of problems with Blog Talk. So right now we're on part 96. And they're being real nice right now. Thank you, Blog Talk. Okay. So I guess everybody's ready?
Yes.
Okay. Here we go.
I have my
part 96. You got your tea? Okay. Okay. Great, that's good. Part 96, The Visitor's Return. Silently she stood, watching as the car disappeared. Slowly she turned and walked back to join her uncle on the stoop. He said, "They came and left like thieves in the night. Not much of a reunion was it for you, child?" And she says, "I'll be okay. He'll be back this weekend. The job they do keeps them very busy, and they work for such a huge company." Now, see, we know they're working for this company that's trying to take Africa over. And I think her uncle really doesn't like that, but we'll go on. And he says, "Yes, we all know of Calabrese in these parts. They're trying to take over our country, and we refuse to let that happen. I'm very surprised your husband works for them. Well, we have to eat, Uncle. Besides, the pay is excellent." "Indeed it is," he replied. Ayira noticed that her aunt Maymay, who is Diju's wife, was not present during their talk, and she asked about her. Diju said, "She's retired for the night. She wanted to give us time together to catch up on family affairs." "So tell me, Ayira, what is life back in the States now? I remember the last time I was over there, things were pretty bad. It was in the late 60s, and the movement was to integrate with whites, and the whites were refusing to allow that to happen. I never wanted to participate because I knew that I could do better than that, so I left and came back home. But my sister elected to stay, and after she had you, she wanted to come to Africa. But that husband of hers wouldn't let her. He didn't want to return. I thank the creators for sparing your life, and I admit his parents did a great job in raising you. It was the least they could do." "What was mother like?" asked Ayira. "She was a song in the wind, a breeze, a shining light, envied by all the ladies because she had that proud African strut. She was sweet as a juicy ripe mango. Why, she could balance 3 baskets on top of her head when she walked. The brothers in the community took notice, and that made your father jealous. He constantly accused her of cheating because her beauty attracted all the male eyes around her." Uncle Diju lowered his head and began to weep a little and continued by saying, "After what he did to her, I searched for him, and when I found out where he was, I was told he knew I was coming for him. That's when the coward would not confront me and took his own life. I was not sorry about it, and that's when I left America." "Don't cry, Unc. I didn't mean to bring up sad memories for you. I never knew who my parents were, but I'm glad you told me this much. Somehow I knew she was a beautiful and kind lady. And you will never have to worry for me, because I married the most handsome, wonderful, kind, and gentle man on the planet. Believe me, Unc, he takes care of me." "Well, he'd better, or I will come after him too. It's late. Tomorrow I will break out the photo album and show you pictures of your mother and me in our younger days." They both hugged arm in arm and turned in for the night. Morning was different for Ayira. She didn't hear the usual singing of the birds, but instead, as she peered out the bedroom window, the sounds were coming from ospreys and bald eagles. Although this was not the norm, she welcomed the change. Seeing life in a different perspective made her realize just how happy she was to be able to connect with her African family and her in-laws in Detroit. A familiar scent was entering her room as she wrapped herself up in a robe and walked out toward the small, cramped kitchen. "Good morning, Ayira. Did you sleep well?" asked Maymay. "Yes, I did, thank you. Where's Uncle Diju?" "He went into town to get more groceries. He said he would be back shortly." "Well, I wished he would have awakened me, because I have money to share for my stay." "No, dear. We're just glad to have you here. This is not a hotel. This is your home. Nonetheless, I want you and Uncle Diju to have it." Ayura handed Aunt Maymay $1,000. Oh my, this is way too much money, dear. Don't you need this money? We have enough. Besides, I don't want you all to do without whatever it is you need. I know times are harder here than it is at home. Tell Unc to put it in a secret place. Don't let anyone know you have this money. I don't want my relatives compromised. I will be sure that Diju does that. Now, are you ready to eat something this morning? I have fruit, bread, kiwi juice, eggs, and tossed chicken. Just as Maymay was naming off breakfast, Diju walked in and said, "Good morning, my darling. How did you sleep?" "Diju, I've already asked her that." "So you beat me to it. How are you?" "I'm fine, Unc, and I slept well. I was telling Maymay that I wanted to give you something for being here, so I gave you both $1,000. Please put it in a safe place and don't let anyone know you have that kind of money around here." "You did what, child? We don't need it. May, didn't you tell her she's welcome without paying us? This is not a hotel. This is your home." Aunt Maymay said the exact same thing, but I'm telling you like I told her. It's fine. It's okay. Please take it from me, Unc. Diju saw that Ayura was sincere, so he took the money from Maymay and went into their bedroom and came back out 5 minutes later. "We were about to have breakfast, Diju. Come and set the table before the food gets cold." "I'm going to wash up and get myself together. I'll be out," said Ayura. The phone rang. Uncle Diju called out to Ayura that her husband was asking for her. She tidied herself up to get to the phone to her beloved. "Hi, baby. How are you this morning?" she asked. "I'm calling to see how you were. Did you sleep okay?" "You are the third person to ask me that this morning, and although you were on my mind till I fell asleep, I slept great. I am missing you again. The weekend seems so far away." "I know, but when Friday morning gets here, we are going to get us a picture-perfect hotel room and never be seen again until Sunday evening." "I can't wait. So what are you doing now?" "I'm about to have breakfast." "Well, okay. I'm going to go back on patrol to pull a double. I'm giving my guys a few hours downtime. They deserve it." "You see how wonderful you are? That's what I love about you. You take care of your family and your soldiers." "I do my best. I'll call you later. Love you," said Leonard. Into the phone, she threw kisses to her husband and then hung up. Breakfast was fast and over. Diju and Ayura retired to the couch, and he pulled out the family photo album. As he thumbed through the laminated covered pages, he pointed out the various members of the family. First, her grandparents on her mother's side were identified. They were stately, sitting in high-backed wicker chairs resembling royalty. The next couple of pages were of the people who raised her, her father's parents, with Ayura sitting in the middle as a child. She tried to remember that day but could not. Next, there came a photo of her mother and uncle playing and running around in a place she was familiar with. It was her family home in North Carolina before they were moved inland by property invaders. He said he would never forget that day. They had picked blackberries in a field and took them home to their mother, and she baked the best pie in the neighborhood. There were many pictures of family, but none so moving as the one Diju came upon next. It moved him so much he became tearful and said, "You are very special, Ayura. Do you have any idea what your name means? In Africa, Ayura means chosen one, and your middle name, Adeola, means crown of honor. This picture of you and your mother holding you just hurts my heart. She didn't know she would be embracing you for the last time in her earthly life. Ayura reached for her uncle and hugged him, not letting go. Maymay suggested they go take a walk in the city and get some sunshine to stave off the sadness they were feeling. Maybe go shopping. She said that always made her happy. Ayura agreed that it made her happy too. Her uncle put the album away and they left, leaving Maymay time to herself. Once outside the home, they both were feeling much better. Strolling down the path, they encountered many species of birds she wasn't familiar with. Diju pointed to each one and called them out by name. They were getting closer to the city, for they were met by cabbies, asking them if they needed a ride for hire. A tired Diju agreed, and they rode the rest of the way. Taking in the sights of the hustle and the bustle of the people, the learning halls of the Ahmed Baba Center and the private libraries were majestic and beautiful. They visited the many street vendors and bought several items of clothing, some for her and a great deal of things for her husband. With so many bags topped with a full course lunch under their belts, they grabbed a cabbie home. Maymay was standing in the doorway when they arrived, and as soon as she saw them, she quickly ran out, somewhat frightened. "Dear, what's wrong?" asked Diju. "There are dogons in our backyard, just standing there, watching the house."
"Dogons?"
he asked. "Well, what's a dogon?" asked Ayura, who by now was frightened as well. Making his way in the house, with the two women closely following behind him, Diju went into the kitchen and saw them 30 feet away from their back door, staring. They were dressed in the traditional garb and with a lion cub attached to its handler. Uncle Diju said, "Well, apparently they have a leader with them. I will politely go and ask them to leave my property." He went to the back door and walked out to them. The lion cub was startled at his presence, but soon corrected itself with its master. He spoke to the leader for a few minutes, and then they turned and walked away. Diju returned to the house, closely followed by Maymay and Ayura. In the living room, they all sat down. He told them their leader stated that a supernatural entity was in the house, and he wanted me to know that they would be back to see this entity carry out its purpose in this life as we know it. This discovery even frightened him. He suggested to his niece to call her husband and take her somewhere else safer. Ayura, having a fighting spirit within her, refused to leave her uncle and his wife in case they returned. She would be the first to help them defend their home. Nonetheless, Uncle Diju wanted her to call him. If anything happened to her, he would never be able to forgive himself. She promised Diju she would call him later. Her uncle felt satisfied of the promise she made and began to give her and Maymay a lesson on who the Dogon people were. They were a race of people who lived long ago in Egypt. They were forced to leave under religious persecution and war. They migrated from there and found their way to Northwest Africa, here in Mali. And this is where they have been ever since. No one knows exactly the entire history of the Dogon. And as far as I know, they are a people who believed in the star gods of Osiris, Sirius, and Isis. They were the cosmic gods of the skies. They believed the first humans to occupy the earth were called Nomos. And they also believed that our origins begin in the stars before time and that their gods were already here on this planet. The star gods came to earth and changed many things. But me, I do know that melanin, our darkness, is all powerful, and it is the life force of the entire universe. I believe that the creators gave it to us specifically to use at some point again, but for what and when, I don't know. Uncle, if what you say is true, then we have power like that, then I believe you. I'm going to call Leo and tell him what happened, as I promised. Maymay was able to pull herself together, and Ayira helped her prepare supper. Ayira called him after they had eaten, but she never mentioned the Dogon. At the most, they made small talk and plans for their weekend. Shortly after, they turned in for the night. Uncle Diju sat up most of the time, watching and venturing out every 2 hours to walk around his house and to make sure all was secure. There were no incidents to report to Maymay and Ayira the next morning, and while the women kept each other company, Uncle Diju slept most of the day. Tuesday turned into Friday, and this was the day Ayira and Leo were waiting for. Her husband was coming to sweep her up off her feet and take her far away to a secret location. She packed her bags along with the clothing she bought for him and waited with bated breath on the stoop until she saw the dust behind his car in the distance. And as he got closer, he roared into the driveway and bailed out quickly into her arms. He spoke to Uncle Diju and Aunt Maymay, but he never asked Diju about the Dogon. Diju thought it to be a bit strange, but he didn't question him. All he could see was the happiness his precious niece was experiencing with her husband, and he did not want to interfere with that. Uncle Diju, Aunt Maymay, we're leaving now. Be careful and take good care of yourselves. And you do know what I mean, right? Said Ayira. Once they were in the car alone, he asked, take good care of yourselves and you know what I mean? Is there anything wrong with them? No, they're fine. Leo's senses told him his wife was hiding something. He knew her 2 years before they were married, and he thought he knew her pretty well. Are you hiding something from me? What is it? She knew if her husband found out about what happened a few days ago, he would ship her right back to Carolina right now, no questions asked, for the sake of her safety. But she wanted to be with him. You're being paranoid, Leo. Loosen up. You're not on the site now. You're with me. So let's go have some fun, okay? Okay, I'm with that. I will not be a Marine this weekend, but if it happens to come out of me, don't get angry. It's who I am right now. When I retire, I'll just be Mr. Leonard J. Knight with the sweetest wife in heaven and on earth. Okay, Sister Bev, that was part 96.
Okay, that was 96. I want to play one of your songs before we go to the next chapter. Okay?
Okay. All righty.
So let's see here. Before I play the song, I have a question. Someone raised their hand. 719-439, did you have a question or comment?
Yeah, Auntie Beth, this is Ramon.
Hi, Ramon. How are you doing?
I'm good. How you doing, sister?
Hi, Ramon. How you doing? I'm doing pretty good. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing good. Enjoying this night.
Good.
You know, I want to commend you. I'm impressed with you taking and sitting down and writing out, you know, I don't know, I'm going to say a creation, you know, but wherever this is coming from, I do want to commend you for it. It has a very good cohesive storyline so far. I've been able to catch a podcast of the first time you were on, or the first time I think you might have started reading this. I think you're doing a really good job with the story. Now, I came in late. Auntie Bear, we ain't getting an alert.
Uh-huh.
The show is coming on.
Are y'all not getting any alerts?
I'm not.
Okay. I'll check with Blog Talk because they're making changes.
Well, I made it a point to just call and see if you was on tonight. But anyway,
Okay.
Said, I think this is a great thing you're doing. I do want to know, where do you derive this creativity from? Is it just natural, or is it something you caught a hold through in history? And these characters seem to have a lot of dimension, and that's a good thing, I feel, when reading. So let you answer that question. You know, where you get this vision from? I mean, is this something natural or historical information?
Well, Ramon, I don't know where this came from. It's like, you know, I got a wake-up call. You know, I think it's when that 1987 comet thing or whatever happened, the burst, you know, it happened to me back then because I used to work in corporate, and this was shortly after that, the 9/11 thing. And I said, you know, I was never going to be caught in somebody's office sitting up in here, you know, something happening like that to us. I'm going to be out here. So right after that, something just said, you know, look, sit down and write this stuff. And I did do a little of, investigations on getting this information, you know, to bring it in cohesive. What I did, I took some of the truth and wrapped it around fiction so that it can be more entertaining, I guess you would say that. And, you know, to help the readers get a sense of what's happening today. So I you know, it just started when I was really a child. So, and then it expanded from there. And like I said, I wasn't going to be caught in a place where, you know, we may be tied up, our people be tied up, and we can't fend for ourselves and do for ourselves. So, you know, I didn't want to work for the plantation anymore. I didn't want to be caught with them.
Necessity is a mother, ain't
Oh, yeah. That's the truth. You're right about that.
They ain't lying when you said that, did they? But, okay, so you helped me get to where I actually why I raised my hand. It sounds like you already got a business structure going on. Now, I don't want to take too much of Auntie Bear's showtime.
No, go ahead.
Need some more.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well,
what I'm trying to do is.
Go ahead, bro. Go ahead.
Well, no, tell me what you're trying to do, because my question is still going to be pretty broad for anything you're probably about to say.
Oh, no, I'm interested in getting this to my people visually. I want to see a vision of this on the screen so everybody can see this. I don't know if I'm going to be able to do that. Excuse me, because it goes deeper than the Black Panther. And I think it goes deeper than the Matrix, actually, because it has something to do with us as a people, as a whole. But it's not going to be everybody, because everybody is not in tune with what's happening today. It's not going to be everybody. But to the people that is going to make it out of this, it's going to be basically for them. But,
well,
you know, go ahead with your question.
To add to what you just said, to resonate is a choice, and I'm glad you said what you said, because, I mean, the truth ain't exclusive to nobody. It's just simply, do you want to accept it or not? You know, and it's only going to be relevant. I mean, it's only going to reveal itself with the amount of effort you put into seeking the truth. So, therefore, if you ain't even seeking it, it'll never present itself to you anyway. But off to what I was saying about the business side of this, I'm sure it's occurred to you, or you probably already structured to, this is an asset. Okay. And recently I've been talking with some people in the financial environment. I want to share some with you if you're not into this already. And this is something I'm bringing to the show, Auntie Beth. I'm putting together a nice piece of let's get in the game and do something if y'all really want to do something. This is what you have is a very valuable asset. To have a book series, you know, I have writers around me, you know, I encourage them to write their books and stuff. So I know it takes a lot of energy to put that stuff together, to even recall your imagination, you know, to that point. But what I want to say is that this is an asset, and you could easily create a private equity fund geared at what you just said. You want to be able to create literature, text, visual, and probably audio at some point. Okay, so you got various structures of assets within this book alone. You know, everything from publishing to, you know, copyright ownership, you know, the whole gamut. You're talking mechanical rights, royalties, the whole nine. And this is stuff that the industry seeks to take from us real quick.
Indeed, that's true.
If you're not structured yet, I would probably start talking to someone, an attorney particularly, that deals in equity funds, and let them see what you have. But what you would probably want to focus on, if you, here's what I learned today talking to a gentleman. He told me we can get involved in a lending club as a private equity fund. So here's what he's saying. We create a general partnership. Let's just say that's you and Auntie Bev. You guys come together. You decide you're going to create a fund. And within this fund, you're going to have limited liability partners or LLCs that sponsor you. That could be us. But within your structure as a general partnership, you and Bev, you guys get to take a portion of the operation expenses from the sponsorships, the contributions that we would all be making, okay? Then you would collect on some interest from the profit. See, putting your book out there, here's what I'm saying. We could all come together now and invest $1,000 and become a lending club partnership. They pay out about 13%, but they're only going to give us 3-4%, okay? You could put your book up, get it appraised, and put your book into a fund, and you can turn this and become part of a lending club that start. They want us to stay in it for 5 years, but the minimum is just $1,000. And they basically, we're lending money out to people to buy houses and start businesses. So now you've created a portfolio with your book to show that it assetizes. So I'll be bringing some more of this information to the show in about, you know, I got a couple more weeks. I'm still getting some other research, but when I come back, Bev, this is what we're going to be talking about. Okay. Thank you for letting me say that,
all right,
man.
Excellent.
Good luck. Okay.
Well, that sounds really great, bro, Ramon, because I do be listening to the show. I do be listening on Friday, so you can believe that. But thank you for that information.
Okay.
That sounds really promising.
Thank you, Ramon. Okay. All right. So let me see. I want the people to listen to your music, too. So what was the one I just played? Do you remember? What was that one I just played? It wasn't.
That one was, what was the name of it? Because I do them right off my head. I don't really plan them.
Is it Set a Veil? Well, I think that was the one. Was it? Or was it Fox? I don't know. Okay, let me see which one I remember.
Yeah.
Now that's the one I just played.
We'll be right back.
the theme song of the movie. Okay, Sister Seta, you can start with
that was the theme song. So I was just letting everyone, if you hear that music, think of the chemistry. Right now, I was kind of going through some things here. Let me see if I can get back. Okay. Here we go. Oh, well, wow. I have kind of messed around here with my tablet here. I need to get back to where I need to be. Just give me a few seconds right here to scroll down here. Okay, so we finished with part 97. We're on part 90. Let me make sure. Okay. Here we go. We're on part
96.
Okay, 96. Part 96. It's so weird counting down to this, but we're counting down. So right now, we're on part 95, the ritual.
Yeah.
It's going to get very interesting here. Part 95, the ritual. It was a surprise to Ayira that her and her husband ended up at the airport. Standing there, she wondered what was going on with him. Since you are so secretive, I have a secret and a surprise at the same time for you, said Leonard. Oh, really? She asked. Really? The baggage handler followed them to the counter and placed their bags down beside them. Leo said to the ticket agent, I have made first-class reservations for two to Cairo, Egypt. The name is Knight. Ayira asked, we're going to Egypt? You knew I always wanted to go there. Thank you, baby. This is one of the best surprises you've given me. I love you. I love you too, he replied. Now, these are real people, married man and woman people. That's why they're so courteous to each other. This kind of love you can't find. Well, you can find it, but it's out there. I guess you just have to look. But anyway, let me go on with the story. I love you too, he replied. After their reservations were confirmed, they walked away from the counter towards the airplane catwalk. And Ayira said, we won't be back in 2 days. How did you pull this off, considering the mission? Well, I was granted a week and a half, General Miller. He said two newlywed people deserve a chance to be together for more than a few days. He also said to her, baby, I might not be coming home for another year or two. This is how important this thing is. I shouldn't be telling you this, but, well, then don't tell me. If it has to do with the security of the country, then I don't want to know. You're right. I shouldn't tell you, but you are wrong. It has nothing to do with the security of the United States. It has something to do with the security of the entire world. His eyes told it all. Ayira could read her husband like a book. Whatever was going on at that place, it was too intense to even mention. It was no wonder that he and the general picked her up at the airport, appearing to be civilians. When the stewardess took their tickets and they sat in their seats, Leo went on to say, baby, I think I'm going to quit the Marines. I'm going to put in for early retirement. You've never heard me say this before, but I'm afraid. I'm afraid of the mission and where this is all going. There are things that were told to me that if it got out and I know them, then there's no telling what would happen to me. My safety, our safety, is not guaranteed. He thought to himself, Dr. Ocellus may have tried to set him up. The unthinkable came to him. What if the general knew what was going on with the information the doctor told him? After all, he is the general and he should know each and every little thing that goes on there. There was no way in hell the doctor would keep this important discovery to herself. His thoughts were short-lived as soon as he turned to his wife. When they strapped themselves in. After they were in the air, the Egyptian pilot announced, we will arrive in Cairo in 2 hours. Please feel free to walk about the plane, watch any movie you choose, and take advantage of our cuisine, and thank you for choosing to fly Egyptian Air. Ayira and her husband dined on the finest food they offered. Once the champagne was consumed, they decided to rest the remainder of the way. What seemed like a moment in time, Leo glanced out of the window and saw the sights of the land. Cairo was magnificent. The pyramids in the distance were commanding in every way. When Ayira set her eyes upon them, she felt a force like no other, as if they were beckoning her. Her first priority was to go to them, to be near them, to touch them. The structures were calling her body to be present inside of them. She could not shake the feeling, so she requested to her husband to get the closest hotel near them. When the plane landed and their entire luggage was claimed, a stranger approached them and offered to drive them in his cab to the Hilton Pyramid Hotel. The Giza Pyramids was in the background of the hotel. Although Leo was not a golfer, it had a golf course, and he thought that was great. Maybe one day he might try and learn when he retired. By the looks of the hotel when they walked in, it was themed with 1,000 years of ancient Egyptian history. The on-site spa was inviting to Ayira, and she decided to dedicate herself to her well-being by making good use of it. After arriving to their suite, the stranger who drove them helped in assistance with their luggage to the room on the 3rd floor. He said to Leo, "May the ancestors be with her." Well, he thought that was a strange thing to say. Leo nodded his head back to the stranger and gave him a tip for his help. Inside, most everything in the room was shaped exactly like a pyramid except the tub, which mimicked a pharaoh's tomb. The colors were beige, black, and gold. All the fixtures in the bath were gold. It was stunning. By midday, the two of them were more than ready to explore the cultures and the site of Cairo. They walked the streets and spotted a little cafe where they dined and drank the local fare. Night began to fall, and they strolled back hand in hand to their room, where they were too exhausted to be together. All they could do was bathe and fall in each other's arms. Bright and early the next morning, Ayira and Leo were awakened by a call to their room they had scheduled for each day they were there. After breakfast, it was recommended to them that they tour the cities named Luxor and Nama Bay. The first stop the bus made was in Luxor. It was once an ancient Egyptian capital. It's literally an open-air museum, and they were awestruck of the beauty of their ancestors, masonry, and wondrous creations ever known to man. They made their way to the Valley of the Kings. In the pamphlet they carried, it said Luxor was divided by the Nile into areas commonly known as the East Bank and West Bank, which were considered in ancient Egyptian times as a symbol of respective of life and death. On the West Bank, the tomb of Tutankhamun lay in the Valley of the Kings, and in the Valley of the Queens lay Nefertiti's tomb, Ramses II's favorite wife. Valley of the Queens was a place where the wives of the pharaohs were buried in ancient times, as well as princesses, and various members of nobility. They took picture after picture of all that was in their eyesight. "Look, sweetheart," said Ayira, pointing to a drawing resembling him on a stone on the wall. "It has been said that we've lived before." Leo closely looked carefully at the depiction of his lookalike and had a few reservations about its appearance, and said to her, "I don't think he looks like me, but I do see the shape of my head, sort of. I feel something inside of me, Leo, something that wants to break away from my being. I feel anxious." "Well, do you want to go back to the hotel? Are you ill?" "No, I'm not ill. I'm just nervous." I need to do something, and I don't know what it is. Ayura could not for the life of her understand what it was she needed to do, but they continued on. They visited 3 of the 63 tombs, and it was a must that she visited Tutankhamun's tomb. In the booklet, they read his tomb was undisturbed when it was discovered in 1922. Ramses IV also lay there as well. Under the massive cliffs of the Nile, they saw the mortuary temple of Hatshepsut. It was also known that Deir el-Bahari, it is dedicated to Amun-Ra, the sun god. Inside, they saw sun court, chapel, and the sanctuary. Ayura thought to herself, what a beautiful temple, and it was dedicated to her Nubian ancestors, who wielded all power. After departing the temple, they boarded the tour bus and headed straight for the Hard Rock Cafe in Nama Bay. It was recommended as a place to stop and have a bite, especially if you felt like having some American food mixed in with the atmosphere of home. Leo had been away for a while, and this was perfect for him to experience a little red, white, and blue. Inside the cafe, it had a wild collection of rock star memorabilia, from Michael Jackson to Ray Charles. During the stop in Nama Bay, the two relaxed on the beachfront, walking and talking about what they had experienced so far. There were all types of beach and water activities, plus a glass-bottom boat ride on the Red Sea. It was considered a paradise for snorkelers and divers who could enjoy the coral reefs and amazing colorful fish, but the two opted out for a simple swim in the warm water. Late into the afternoon, when they boarded back onto the bus, a little damp after their swim, Leo said, "The shower is mine. Want to join me? My energy level is out of the roof. I can't wait to hold you in my arms and finally give you what we both need," she replied. Okay, now this part, we want to read the book on this because it's a little dicey, so we'll skip that part. So here we go. We're going to start right here as the sun was settling over the bustling city of Cairo, and the famous pyramids on the Giza Plateau came to light. They viewed a magnificent magical sound and light and light show from their hotel balcony. They could hear the narration and see the multicolored lighting of the pyramids by the curators of the city. This was an enchanting atmosphere, and the history of those mysteriously built gigantic structures was truly one of the best experiences a man could have given to his wife. After the show was over, their meal was served to them in their room by the chef of the hotel. After Leo tipped the man, the chef told Leo to carefully watch over his wife and not to let her out of his sight. Leo hoped that Ayura didn't hear what he said as he watched her reaction after he shut the door on him quickly. She was taste testing the food and complimenting on how delicious it was. "Taste this, darling, you'll love it," she said. Leo walked over to the balcony and observed several strange-looking men watching him. He began to go into marine mode. Not paying much attention to him, he tasted the meat and said it was good. This made Ayura wonder what was on his mind, but she couldn't stop picking at the food. He walked over to his personal tote, and in this tote, he had placed an undetectable pistol in it. He removed it and placed it in the side of his pants under his shirt. He said to her, "This is what I want you to do. I'm going outside for a moment. I want you to lock this door behind me and do not let anyone in here. Do you understand? Aira, puzzled by her man in this revelation, wondered what the hell was going on. But she agreed to do exactly what he demanded. Leo left the room, and on the other side of the door, he spoke to Aira, instructing her to lock it now, and when he returned, he would knock 3 times, and then, only then, would she open the door after hearing his voice. Following his tactical instincts, he exited out of the side door. He carefully peeked around a corner of the building and watched the 3 men standing in front of the hotel, still in the same place from where he first observed them. They were brazen enough to care whether anyone saw him or not. Leo walked away from the side of the hotel and into the side dark parking lot. His thoughts were to surprise the men, approach them from behind, kick butt, and ask questions later. Once he had surprised them, Leo snatched the biggest of the 3 and twisted his arm. He punched him in the nose and pushed him to the ground. It happened so quickly, one of them ran away as fast as he could. Leo had the 3rd man cornered between 2 vehicles, and he shouted at him, "Why are you spying on me and my wife?" Calmly, he replied with a sense of an ass-kicking coming on. The man said, "We wanted to inform you and your wife the coming of a turn in power. In the near future, a king and a queen, along with the star people, will repossess the universe. They will expel man and his kind with all of his evils on all the planets in the heavens where he has ventured. This you need to know because your wife is the king. Her name is Aira. It means she's the chosen one." "How do you know her name? And what the hell are you talking about, you and your idiotic ancient traditions? My wife sure is the chosen one. I chose her, and she chose me. We have nothing to do with this place and your outlandish predictions. And if you don't get the hell of stepping, I'm going to show you a tradition that we carry out back where I'm from. It's called KLQL, K-A-Q-L, kick ass and question later." Leo pulled out his pistol and warned them to never come near him or his wife again. The man agreed. The stranger and his partner walked away from him and into the dark of night. Making his way back to the room, Leo's knuckles on his right hand were sore and bruised. He said to himself, "How am I going to explain this to my wife?" He did not want her to fear being there, as their trip had just begun. As much as she was enjoying every minute of it, and he was enjoying every minute of her, this was posing a problem for him. He was going mad as hell, all the while thinking of what just happened. He hated to do what he did to the brothers, but swore if push come to shove, he would find out who they were and assassinate anyone who would dare pull a stunt like this again. He would do it without the country's knowledge, though. When he returned, because he's a Marine, he knocked as promised. Aira asked who it was, and her husband answered. She let him in and hugged his neck tightly. Then she could not help but observe his hand. It was beginning to swell immensely. "Darling, what happened to you? Where did you go?" she asked. "Oh, I accidentally caught my head in the door, going out to the pool patio to look at the pyramids before they turned all the lights out." "Well, you could have looked at them right here from the balcony." "Yeah, I know, but I wanted to see the other one, you know, the smaller one. You can barely see that one from here." "So don't tell me the real reason. I won't pressure you if you don't want me to know." "Okay, fine, but this is what I want you to do. Never, ever go anywhere on this trip without me, okay? Now, that being said, I'm starved. Is the food still hot?" "Yes, let me fix you some of it. It's delicious." From that point on, Leo forgot about the swelling of his hand. He and his wife sat and ate their supper together. They talked about the joy of being in Africa and every aspect of it, right from the sand dunes of Mali and Timbuktu, right down to being in Cairo and Luxor near the Nile River. This was her dream come true. Again, they made love all through the night, only stopping for once for Ayera to make her way to the bathroom. After being in there so long and making sure she was looking perfect in her appearance for her man, she returned only to find him asleep, curled up with an oversized pillow under his head. She smiled and said to herself, "He's really had a very long day and he needs his rest, because in the morning he'd better be ready to go." Ayera was wide awake, so she chose to dress herself in her swimsuit and go down to the pool and take a swim against her husband's advice. When she arrived, there was no one in sight, just the sound of the calming waters flowing from the waterfall. She untied the belt to her bathrobe and dove in on the deep end, and she swam the length of the pool to the shallow end. When she came up for air, there stood the men who Leo encountered earlier, but more of them. Before Ayera could scream, one of them pulled her out and placed his hands over her mouth with a white cloth. She remembered nothing else. When she awoke, she was in front of a grassy mud hut, naked and totally exposed, lying on a makeshift shrine, and in her presence was a group of men and women dressed in straw skirts with masks that looked like an upside-down human figure. She could not move her body, yet she was not tied down in any way. She was paralyzed. They repeatedly chanted the words, "Nomo Amma, Nomo Amma, Nomo Amma," again and again and again. Ayera was terrified for her life and regretted that she did not take heed to her husband's wishes not to venture out on her own. She was approached by a man who looked to be their leader or their priest, and he chanted unfamiliar words over her that she could not understand. If they were going to harm her in any way, she was wishing they would go ahead and get it over with. But instead, after the chanting and the dancing, he held in his hands a chalice made of pure gold, the biggest red jewel in the middle of it Ayera had ever seen. It contained a thick red-colored liquid that reeked of eucalyptus and olive oils. He drew a triangle on her abdomen with the liquid, and in the triangle he drew a circle and a line. From the line he extended three limbs, one across the line and two on the bottom of the line. After he drew this, he beckoned her to drink its content, and she had no other choice but to oblige. One swallow of the aromatic drink produced instant nausea, and up came everything she had for supper and everything else she consumed that day. I guess she was getting a cleansing. Anyway, she was ill to the point of passing out, but she could still hear the celebration of the strange people's ritual. Ayera was deathly afraid. Before she knew it, she was back on the deck of the pool. To her, it was as if she never went anywhere, but she knew she had been taken unknowingly against her will. While wrapping herself in her white robe, dazed, confused, and terrified, she ran back to the hotel room she shared with her husband, who was asleep in the same position she left him in. With him resting so soundly, this disturbed her to the point of never closing her eyes at all the rest of the night. She sat up quietly in the shadows, alone in a chair in the corner of the room, and with the street lights sifting through the blinds, it reflected off her tear-stained face. Okay, that was part 95.
All right. Getting interesting.
Getting very interesting.
Yes. So we have like 13 minutes left. Do you want to go over time or you want to continue next week? How do you want to do it?
Okay, well, we can continue next week if we have only 13, because part 94, the return home, you know, that says it all. They're getting the hell out of there. So, but anyway, yeah, we can do it next week.
And so now, you know, I'm getting the timing together here. So if we're doing two chapters at a time, this is a good time. But if we're doing three, we need more time. And especially to give if someone wants to comment or anything like that. So with the 13 minutes that we have left, does anybody have any questions or comment about the book that you've heard so far? This is the time to speak up. And Seta, if you have anything that you want to add to your story here.
Okay, well, it's getting to the point to where they are kind of figuring out. It must be something to what all these people are saying to them, because they're basically getting hints. It's not like they're telling at all. They're just hinting to them that, you know, watch over her, you know, make sure that, you know, you take care of her. Don't let her out of your sight, because these things are about to happen. It's about her, but it's not about her. I think she's just the vessel. So, but then when she drank the red liquid, you know, it just took everything out of her. And I guess it's just preparing her to be able to, you know, take on whatever it is that's coming next. And so, you know, Leo discovers, you know, these people, these men watching them, and he's getting all these hints, all these folks telling him certain things at the airport, certain things at the hotel, you know, so.
Mm-hmm. So spiritually, I mean, they knew she was coming, and they knew, or they know how, who she was or who she is. You know, nobody, I mean, this is something that they picked up through the spirit.
Right. Yet they knew she was coming, but when you think about it, it was only when she came to Africa, because before that, you know, she was just a regular person like everybody else. But when she went to Egypt, you know, among the ancestors, it was like she had been there before. They knew she was coming, you know, and she had been there before she was coming. Mm-hmm. So everything is starting to manifest itself there.
Okay. And she was part of the ritual that they were doing. That's why you called it the ritual.
Yeah, the ritual. She, you know, not listening to her husband. She's going to go out there and take her little hard head self out there to the pool and swim, not listening to him, you know, because basically he was her, I guess her guardian was her guardian. And even though that's her husband, he's still her guardian because of the title that he has as a Marine. You know, Marines are some tough folks, okay? And as we know, in today's, you know, military of today, they're some gruesome fighters, you know. So, and they're trained, you know, to kill people. Just basically say it. They're trying to kill people, you know.
Right.
That's why he was able to do what he did. And, of course, this is his wife, somebody he knows. It's not like just some soldier from another country. This was his wife. Mm-hmm. And he was willing to do anything to protect her.
Mm-hmm.
And so he did it.
All right.
And he would do it, so. Yeah, there are two people, there are two regular people that is in love, which is something, and you know, it's there today, you know, there are people out there, you know, this regular, this in love, but I didn't want all that other extra stuff. I mean, it's enough stuff in here to cover what I wanted to manifest in this, because in order for something to manifest, you have to kind of get involved. So with that being said, you know, if the listeners or whatever want to get the book on Amazon, they can read the part that I left out. It's there. I just kind of omitted it for the show. Yeah.
Okay. So really and truly, these two people got together, and it really wasn't an accident or coincidence. I mean, this is something that's in divine order, if you want to say. They were supposed to be together because of who she is, and he is her protector, but in the physical world, he's her husband. Is that what you're saying?
Well, actually, they both, their ancestors come from way back. When you find out who her ancestors are and who his ancestors are, they were supposed to come together like this.
Yeah,
it's been making for thousands of years. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
I mean, even though they don't know it yet.
Okay.
And I think
that's how spirit works.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think she's Dogon. I think her ancestors are Dogon. That's why they were always around her, always, you know, like, in other words, they were like protecting her too and getting her ready, you know, to call their ancestors back from thousands of years ago, you know, because the Dogon, you know, they know everything. So basically they were calling their ancestors back through her vessel.
Okay.
So it's some things, you know, we're not even at the tip of the iceberg. This is nothing compared to what's going to happen. Yeah.
Wow. Well, this is good, you know. This is better than looking at how they had those reality TV shows. You know, at least this you could sit back with your smoke, your drink, whatever it is, and really get into the story. You know, you can really get into it. And this is how we start. It's like a full circle. Remember before the TV came, you know, people had to listen to the radio and you could really get into the story before, you know. So, you know, this is like going full circle. So I'm really enjoying it. And I look forward to next week when we do it again. And next week we'll do three chapters so we can really get into the flavor of it.
Yeah, for
and
me,
so,
when I would like for everyone to sit back and use their imagination and picture these things.
Yes. And you can do it better when you hear it. That's what I'm saying. When we started out, it was like radio, and we used to listen to a lot of people went back there that time. But you can just, it's more. You can get into your visualizing when you hear it versus looking at it, because the TV take your attention away. It, you know, where if you listening to something, you can really get into your imagination. You can see how in your mind how the people look. You know, this is you part of the creation, where at looking at the TV, you're not creating nothing. You just there observing. But when you listening to this, you are participating in the creation. So that's good. It's really good. Well, Sister Seta, I appreciate you taking the time out. I appreciate your work. I really do. And so we look forward to listening to it again. And before we go, tell the people where they can get your book at. Your books is more than one. And the one tonight is what?
It's The Bright Light, the first one.
Mm-hmm.
The Bright Light. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And they can get all of them on Amazon.com, but I'm revising them. So I was thinking more or less of sending them to the family myself and personally autographing them. And also on my website, chemistryfiles.com, and you can go there, check me out, check out some of the things I've done. I love Comic-Con because I'll be there and I'll be promoting my work as well. So, yeah, they can go there. And all the characters on that page, I do all the voices myself. So, you know, if you want to listen to them, it's cool. It's cool. So, yeah,
okay.
Amazon and chemistryfiles.com.
Okay, so you did the music, you're doing, no?
Yeah. Yeah, I did the music that you have. Yes, yes.
Okay, okay. All right. Mm-hmm. Excellent. All right. Well, thank you, Sister Seti, for sharing your creation with us, and we look forward to listening next week. Much love.
Thank you. I'll be glad to come back. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. I'll be on tomorrow. Join me tomorrow at 9:00 p.m.
Yeah. Don't you feel it?
Perfect.
Right at the end of the day, I see things coming my way. It's not pretty. It's not good. It's nothing like you thought it would. The boogeyman is here. So now, you got to prepare. Win or lose, it's all up to you. So what you gonna do, what you gonna do? The world is not like it was before. It used to be so much more. But the aliens are back to throw us all off track. What, you didn't think you had enemies? There's no such thing as frenemies. It's changed for the worse, and you are under the curse. Your ancestors left it for you. So now what you gonna do? You feel it all around you. Your essence got a hold of you. No more sneaking, telling lies, because you realize there's something happening here, producing fake fear.
Oh, I'm scared.
But don't shed no tears. Just get your shit in gear. Truth is coming down on you. Then you gotta make your own truth. Know your right mind. Your future is the time. Don't become their food.
Eat you.
All they wanna do is snack you. Demonic spirits came down. In 9/11, they came to town. So be ready. So be sure. Survival time is on the menu. Empower yourself. Prepare yourself. Do yourself. Be yourself. Then if that means come hard with the knowledge, then go hard.
Go hard.
Can you feel?